They put their shoes on every morning the way we do. They want our votes more than they want corporate money. And if we target our votes, if we summon them to town meetings made up of citizen agendas controlled by the citizen, back in public auditoriums for the senators, representatives, to be instructed and to answer questions without flacks and intermediaries, we do all that, we can start getting things turned around pretty quickly. Remember, the Vietnam War dragged on year after year after year, but the protest reached such a critical point that Congress cut off the Nixon continuation of the Vietnam War by cutting off the money. They just said no more appropriations. So Congress has the power, has the authority in the Constitution, doesn't like to use it. It loves to give the war-making power to the presidency and the appropriations budget power to the presidency because it doesn't want the responsibility. But we're going to give it the responsibility. And that's what all these demonstrations on so many issues, climate in this country, Israel, devastation of Palestine, all these and more have got to not just generate energy into the ether on a weekend march and demonstrations, got to focus on every member of Congress. Now, we start out with at least 25% of the Congress on our side on all of these issues, so that's a good start. But people, when they're marching, should have pictures of their senators and representatives holding them up. They should raise money to start staffing full-time lobbies right next to Congress. The demonstrations come off and they leave some scattered debris around, and it doesn't have that much effect. They've got to complete the loop onto Congress and state legislatures.
Let's talk about immigration. Your parents and mine were immigrants to this country. Today, many thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands are making their way to the southern border seeking entry to the United States. What kind of immigration policy would you like to see?
Well, first, you stop the U.S. over the decades from supporting dictatorships and oligarchs that exploit their people so they can't even make a living for their families. And they look north and they say, look, we can't have democratic societies, apart from Costa Rica, for example. And it's because of the Yankees up north and their Marines down in our midst and their support of the oligarchs. So we better, if you can't beat them, join them. And they head north over the Rio Grande. That's where the problem starts. Most people don't want to leave their native lands and their native families. They're desperate. They're forced to. The blunders and the corruption and the cruelty of U.S. policy south of the border has produced endless books and documentaries, and it's still going on. The U.S. empire started with the Monroe Doctrine heading south. That's number one. The second is, of course, we have to control our borders. There's smuggling, there's pollution, there's contagious diseases from desperate people that haven't been given medical treatment. There are criminal elements, obviously, gangs with drugs and cartels spilling over because we don't decriminalize these drugs and develop health care for people who are overcome with these substances. Of course, we have to control the border, but we're not doing it the right way. And we haven't had an updated immigration law for a long time because of differences between the Republicans, Democrats, and the desire by the Wall Streeters for cheap labor. They love open borders. So it's a complex thing. I would hope that the change in policy and supporting democratic forces in South America, and there are plenty of democratic forces to be supported. Sometimes they elect presidents like Lula of Brazil. It's not like we're starting with barren ground, but we just can't resist supporting the military, training the militarists, soldiers in camps in the U.S., as you've related over the years, David. So that's what we have to do. We have to make sure that the right of asylum is staffed with enough courts and enough immigration staff so these cases can be processed quickly. And we've got to be very humane about it with the children and avoid these teenagers coming in and then being exploited in meat and poultry plants or on tomato agribusiness farms mercilessly and dangerously, child labor, because they're afraid to speak out and there's no protection by the state governments.
Let's move on to the Supreme Court. Given the Supreme Court's makeup, is there any chance to roll back Citizens United, the infamous court ruling that equated money with free speech?
Not a chance with the 6-3 right-wing majority. But there's another way to do it, and I'm surprised that the reform groups on our side don't pay attention to it. Almost all these corporations do business with the federal government. They all have to sign contracts. The federal government is the consumer. We always like to say the consumer is always right. They buy almost everything we buy, plus missiles and other stuff that we don't buy. And all they have to do is say that you cannot bid for business with Uncle Sam if you give money to members of Congress and to elected officials in the White House. That was a simple ordinance that passed in four Southern California cities, years ago, including Santa Monica. They basically said you can't do business with the town if you're paying for the people who decide who gets funded and who gets the contracts. And that is perfectly constitutional. It's a contractual requirement. And it leaves me speechless that groups like Common Cause, Public Citizen, People for the American Way, and other good government groups don't make that a priority. Okay, so, you know, the Republicans are going to be against it. But there were times in the last years since Citizen United when the Democrats controlled both houses. So what was the excuse there? There's a lot of things that can be done by progressive groups that aren't being done, David. A lot of them are getting bureaucratized. They lower their expectation levels. They follow the Democratic Party slavishly. They don't push the Democratic Party. And before they know it, they've been neutralized by their own allies in Congress who don't like to be pushed.
Russell Muchiber, in a front-page story in Capitol Hill Citizen, writes, "Corporate crime cases hit new low under Biden. Where are," he asks, "the congressional hearings?"
Good question. There was one short one in the Senate Judiciary Committee that was written up by the editor of the Capitol Hill Citizen, which is our new newspaper. Very popular around the country. It's in print only. People love it. They can get copies by going to CapitolCitizen.com. They read it in the old-fashioned way, holding it in their hands. They're not distracted and overcome with all the stuff on the Internet when they're trying to read the news. And we're trying a fresh experiment. Anyway, in the forthcoming issue, the answer to your question is there was a short hearing, about a day or so, and it didn't go anywhere. And the editor criticized it in a front-page story in the forthcoming Capitol Citizen. I also have a front-page article, which is titled "Collectively, Congress as a Weapon of Mass Destruction with Multiple Warheads." All the things that Congress collectively, there are exceptions, who they've destroyed peace in the world. They've destroyed a progressive tax system. They're destroying Medicare as we see it, outsourcing it to private health insurance companies who deny benefits and overcharge millions of elderly people, deceptively lured into it. They have destroyed consumer protection. They have destroyed the resiliency of nature and climate by siding with the fossil fuel corporations. They have destroyed the rights of labor by freezing the federal minimum wage. Can you imagine? At $7.25 an hour. They are engines of mass destruction overseas. Bush and Cheney, destruction of Iraq. Hillary Clinton, the butcher of Libya, which Barack Obama persuaded by her to destabilize that country into chaos and violence to this day, called his worst foreign policy decision. We have had a Congress collectively, in so many ways, has been a weapon of mass destruction, using the sovereign power of the people against the people themselves. And so we're the people to organize back home. 535 members, folks, senators and representatives, about a quarter of them or a fifth of them are on the side of progressive agendas, folks. Why aren't you organizing? Why aren't you having your town meetings and summoning them? They'll come if you have 500 or 700 signatures on a petition with emails and occupations clearly written and legible. They'll come. And you don't know your own power, people. You remember, the Constitution started not with we, the Congress. It didn't start with we, the corporation, did it? It started with we, the people. And the corporation and company are never mentioned in the entire Constitution as presently amended. Why do they control us? Because we let them control us. We let them control us as workers, as consumers. We let them control us as taxpayers. We let them control us as voters. We let them control us as citizens. It's time we've got to look ourselves in the mirror, because the omnicides are coming. Some of them are already in our midst. Look what happened when we weren't prepared for COVID-19, with a crazed president trying to deny it for critical weeks, which led to hundreds of thousands of preventable deaths, according to health studies. So I like to always complete your questions, David, not with a diagnosis, but having people have a sense of their own power. It never takes more than 1% of the people in congressional districts, that's 2.5 million adults, to make monitoring and redirecting Congress a full-time hobby or a part-time hobby, you know, 10 hours a week. That's what a hobby, a serious hobby, often takes. Coordinated with full-time watchdog offices, 3-4 people full-time in each congressional district. And that can be done. We don't spend enough time on Congress, to put it mildly, than the players of bridge spend in a week with their bridge clubs and their bridge contacts. Or bird lovers spend watching birds, which is a great vocation, healthy vocation. I wish we had similar time and energy watching Congress. We've written all this up, how to influence Congress. We put out manuals, and I've tried to write a lot of articles. I've had a column since 1971. You can go to Nader.org and get it electronically free. But, you know, we can only go so far. It's up to the people to have a higher estimate of their own significance. Their families are at stake. Their children are at stake. Silicon Valley, Facebook, Meta, Instagram, TikTok, they've abducted most of our children 5 to 7 hours a day, separating them from family, community, nature, into some virtual reality, gulag, metaverse. I mean, they're breaking up the family. These corporations, direct marketing to kids, undermining parental authority. You know, I mean, how much provocation do we need? My sister's written a book called You're Your Own Best Teacher, addressing youngsters, trying to spark their curiosity, imagination, and intellect, and liberating themselves, thinking for themselves with those marvelous traits they have that are being suppressed by the internet, iPhone, or tablet connection every day. And we can't get social studies teachers to pick it up. We're trying to get extracurricular work so that the students can have roundtables and discuss these 54 topics that my sister Claire has put before them. And they're very provocatively relevant to their lives and to their preparation for young adulthood. All kinds of tools. We have a lot of problems we don't deserve in this country, but we have a lot of solutions that are on the shelf because we've created this democracy gap by not getting engaged from the local to the state to the national to international. 1% representing public opinion, and there's a lot of left-right support for living wage, universal health insurance, breaking the crooked corporate crime rip-off people and prosecuting them, new kind of tax system, reducing the bloated, corrupt military contracting budget, you name it. 82% of the Republicans are against Citizens United. How about that one? So we've got a divide and rule control system by the Republicans and Democrats trying to paint us as irrevocably a red state, blue state, conservative, liberal, partisan. That goes back thousands of years, that kind of divide and rule.
Robert Weissman of Public Citizen says, I'm quoting, "We're facing an authoritarian threat like none other in American history, and an election that may well decide the fate of American democracy," unquote. Do you share his worry? And if so, do we vote for Biden then?
Well, I do share his view of the threat. You know, we've been living under a corporate state autocracy, whether the Democrats or Republicans, but Trump has come along. He's taken it to a new level of American fascism. He's unleashed the worst, ugliest forces in our country that were sort of under the surface because they didn't have a champion who got press every day and who had tweets every other minute all over the country. So yes, the threat of American fascism is very real. You can't say they're jokes when he says, "I'll be a dictator just on the first day." He has threatened revenge and prosecution against anyone who's criticized him in the military, including his chief of staff, former General John Kelly, former Secretary of Defense. He's just drooling and dripping with hate. And he's predicted riots in the streets if he loses the election, by his terms, stolen election. There's no election he can run in that, if he doesn't win, is not stolen. He's led the insurrection against Congress. He's escaped the rule of law as a business crook and as a political crook in ways that entitle him to teach a law school seminar on how to escape the rule of law and continue business as usual. And now his lawyers are delaying all these cases, four criminal indictments in the courts in Washington, Georgia, Florida, New York. A very perilous time. As far as how people vote, I say to people, vote your conscience, period. Once you start voting least worst, you're going to get least worst worse every 4 years, again and again. So you vote your conscience. You can make up your own mind. There are other third parties. You can vote right in. You can stay home. But I would urge you to express your vote in some way rather than stay home.
You ran for president 4 times. Is the deck of playing cards still the same for third-party candidates as what you encountered? And what do you think of the Cornel West candidacy?
For the most part, the answer is yes. There are some state laws blocking ballot access that have been diluted and reformed. But by and large, it's harder to get on the ballot in the U.S. if you're a third party or independent candidate than any European or Canadian or Japanese society requires. If you block candidates from giving more voices and choices on the ballot to the American voter, you are basically limiting the meaning of that American voter's decision. So candidate rights are very inextricably related to voter rights. Cornel West, he's good on so many issues. He's so eloquent. He doesn't have an organization. He hasn't raised much money. He'll get probably on 15 state ballots that are pretty easy to get on. And most of those states are blue states. I don't see him being an electoral force, but I see if he's given a chance in the media, which is doubtful, of being an agenda-shifting force of modest levels.
A lot of young people are really turned off by the choices that they're being offered, Tweedledum or Tweedledee. But as things stand now, who do you handicap for the November election? You know, notice it's this, I'm using a horse racing term.
I should say, as a Green Party candidate, looking from the outside, an independent candidate twice for the presidency, that the Democrats should landslide the Republicans. This is the worst Republican Party in history on steroids. Teddy Roosevelt, Senator Robert Taft, Dwight Eisenhower, they couldn't believe how ignorant, stupid, crooked, voter suppressive, anti-children, anti-women, anti-worker, pro-Wall Street, pro-endless war the Republicans are. And if they can't beat a party that is openly undermining the livelihoods of workers and women and children and moving to reduce corporate tax burdens to near zero, regardless of the profit these big companies make, and to lifting the health and safety regulations that keep these companies from killing, injuring, and sickening the American people, and wanting to take tens of millions of people off Medicaid and Obamacare. I mean, if you can't beat a party like that, you better look at yourself in the mirror, Democratic Party. You better start becoming more authentic. You better start connecting with labor unions more and connecting with people who aren't voting because they're despaired that voting means nothing to them and they don't want to take part in it. And get out to vote in the neighborhoods, in the communities, in the housing projects, and stop putting ads on TV that are irritating due to their repetition and emptiness, because your political and media advisors who have corporate clients at the same time get 15% of the television radio buy and don't want to advise the candidates to put the money into ground game, get out the vote. We know it has to be done. Go to winningamerica.net, folks, and you'll see the entire agenda and program that we laid out in 2022. We got to wake up to where we're all on the same side, and we all bleed the same color, regardless of red state, blue state. We all want the same thing for our families, for our community, for our schools. We'll have disagreements, but fundamentally, we want clean air, clean water, honest elections, honest government, good public transit. We want the climate to be attended to. We want to protect our children and grandchildren. We want healthy environments, all these things. But unless we rise to the occasion and develop a left-right collaboration, you've got an unbeatable political force.
On February 27, 1934, in the small Connecticut town of Winsted, a child was born to Rose and Nathra Nader. Happy 90th birthday, Ralph.
Thank you, David.
You were just listening to Ralph Nader on corporate autocracy, fascism, Trump, and the election. I talked with him in February on the eve of his 90th birthday. A legendary figure, Ralph Nader has spent a lifetime fighting on behalf of ordinary people. Life magazine ranked him as one of the most influential Americans of this era. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. We're an independent nonprofit in our 38th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature voices rarely heard in the corporate media, such as Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, Chris Hedges, Arundhati Roy, and Noam Chomsky. And we have a series of programs with Ralph Nader. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, Ralph Nader on corporate autocracy, fascism, Trump, and the election, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or go online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us, 1-800-444-1977. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamyan. Thank you for listening.